I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the 2015 Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we won! We won!
Amen. Amen.
We won a tackle football game!
It was a happy day, a joyous occasion.
John, let's get to it. No procrastination. What to call this one? What's our invocation? No humiliation in College Station. No devastation. No joy for Aggie Nation. Certainly some recreation and motivation. I imagine late last night there was also some procreation among the Auburn Nation. And at times, John, do you know, it looked like they were calling plays on the PlayStation.
Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You should have had libation in there.
I'll leave that one for you. That was all off the top of my head. I didn't have that written down.
That's pretty good.
No, I'm just kidding. I totally wrote it down. We won. I watched the first three drives back and forth on my phone at the big trivia tournament fundraiser for my daughter's, you know, marching band high school thing. And then when the game started, I had to turn my phone off, so I stopped there. And about I finished the game about 1:30 and immediately fell asleep trying to flip over to the Alabama game. I woke up about 2:30 and I remembered that we won. I tweeted, "Hey, we won," and then I fell back asleep again.
Nice.
And by the way, thanks a bunch, and I mean this sarcastically, AU Game Day app, because when I got back in the car, I turned my phone on and the screen lit up and it said, "Final score." And I went, "Ah," and like threw the phone down, and my wife grabbed it and put it in her purse and she wouldn't let me see my phone again until after the game was over. So the AU Game Day app tried really hard to spoil it for me. You know, I got to tell you, and you'll sympathize with this, living in Southern Illinois, you can avoid spoilers for an SEC football game.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you couldn't have done it in Alabama or anywhere.
No.
But, you know, people are like, "Oh, good luck with that." I'm like, "No, you don't understand. Nobody's going to be talking about it. They won't even know it was on."
So, oh, yeah. No, I could walk around on a Saturday night here. We were playing and people wouldn't know.
So. Yeah. Yeah, the only thing was I didn't wear any Auburn gear to the trivia thing purely because I was afraid somebody might have seen it and go, "Hey, congratulations," or, "Oh, well, I'm sorry about that," you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was totally incognito. Man, there are so many storylines. So many storylines that came out of this game. Where do you want to start?
Well, we have to start before the game. Yep. When it was announced that Jeremy Johnson was going to start and Sean White had been not practiced all week.
All right, hold on. So, you know when I found that out?
When?
When he walked out on the field with the offensive line. That's the first I knew of it, was when he walked out there on the field with the rest of the team. And I was like, "Hey, that's Jeremy. What's going on, man?" And I immediately said, "Oh, I bet, judging by the shape of that knee brace last week," you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I bet Sean can't even walk. So sure enough. But so what did you think about that?
Well, it was the beat writers got the news and tweeted it out like right before the game started. Like while we're watching the end of that Arkansas Ole Miss game.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess like a lot of people, I mean, I was nervous. I mean, I wanted Jeremy to do well, and I wanted him to succeed. you know, but having seen him earlier this year, starting him in an SEC road game made me nervous. It really did. And, you know, I felt like if we played well, we could beat A&M, but the starting, you know, the word was like Sean didn't even practice this week.
Yeah. So
he was the third string quarterback.
Like I heard that after the fact. Yeah.
So Jonathan Wallace was the backup. If something had happened to Jeremy or if he had gone down in flames, would have been playing Jonathan Wallace at Texas A&M. So
wow.
That's, you know, that made me nervous, but at the same time, you know, then Jeremy came through and he played very well. He didn't have huge numbers, but he didn't make any big mistakes, and he was very efficient running the offense. We were going up tempo and stuff and making the right decisions and getting the ball out quickly and stuff, and he was very accurate. And I thought he had played really well, and I was so happy for him because he really deserved that. And it was a big win, and he was a big part of it. So,
you know, I guess what I thought when I saw him go out there was, oh, hey, it's Jeremy. And then I immediately thought, all right, here we go. Here's his big chance. Because remember, you asked me this a week or two ago, right?
I did. And you said you wanted him to come out of the cocoon.
Yeah. Every time he comes in the game, I think, hey, this is his big chance. Mm-hmm. And this time it was. I asked myself, why is that? Why am I so, you know, hoping that? And I think it's a couple of things. It's partly just he's a good guy. And I mean, after the game, he said he played it for Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you know, how many players in college football today would have said, wouldn't have even mentioned anything about the other quarterback?
After Jeremy's been through what he went through.
Right.
To say that was impressive.
He's a man. And the other thing was, I've been through so many times where we've had quarterbacks that got thrown in the trash heap, and I've been in Jordan-Hare so many times and heard our own fans yelling stuff, you know. I've nearly gotten in fist fights two or three times in my younger days in Jordan-Hare with people that were insulting our players, our own people insulting our players. I won't put up with that. I won't.
Yeah.
And, you know, over and over, I remember it happening, and with so many different quarterbacks. And so, you know, just like I hoped that Jason Campbell would end up being a good quarterback, they were making fun of him at the Georgia Tech. I was at the Georgia Tech game in 2003, the second game of Jason's junior year. And there were still people on both, you know, Auburn and Georgia Tech side in the stands around me that were criticized, that were like making fun of Jason like he had no business in a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish I could go back and say he's going to be a first round draft pick, but I don't think that anybody would have believed me, certainly. But I, you know, it, Jason was like that, and we went through it with several other quarterbacks over the years. And so, I mean, you know, even Cobb, that's, you know, they both kind of had the same situation at the same time. And Damian Craig went through it in 95 and 96 behind Patrick Nix, and then when he took over. So I've just got a lot of experience of kind of watching redemption stories with our quarterbacks. He is not the first one by a long way, you know?
Sure.
So it's just good to see it kind of work out again. I mean, it's just one game, but it was a road game against a ranked opponent. And
that's right.
For all their issues, they were still, you know, in their big old giant loud stadium on the road in bad weather, and Jeremy looked great.
He did. He looked good. And, you know, the bigger picture beyond Jeremy is that the team looked great.
Mm-hmm.
That is by far the best game this team has played this season. The offense, defense, special teams, that was it. I mean, the offense ran the ball well. The defense shut them down, had a good game plan to really control their offense, and special teams were excellent in bad weather. Just tough to do. It was windy and rainy and stuff there. We didn't, you know, turn the ball over. We didn't have any problems kicking or receiving kicks or anything. And, it, you know, I was looking at some stuff tonight, and that was the first game this year. We averaged over 6 yards every time we snapped the ball, and we held the other team to 4 yards every time they snapped the ball.
There you go.
And that was huge. You know, beyond the Jeremy thing, it was the best the overall team has played. We've had, you know, games where this group played well or that group played well,
mm-hmm.
where this position played well, but we never had a game this year where the whole team played well, they executed well, and we had a good game plan, and they carried it out and, you know, had a lot of success. And part of it was what you've been saying all along is this is the first game this season that Jeremy Johnson, Javon Robinson, and Carl Lawson all played, you know, more than four snaps in.
Yeah, I started to lead this show off by saying, well, it's game one of the 2015 season, and we came out like gangbusters, huh? We're 1-0, man. Because the team that we expected to have, we never really had. I mean, we didn't even have Javon Robinson in the first game when we had Jeremy and when we had Carl.
Yep.
So this is the first game where all three of them were out there more or less hitting on all cylinders. This is the team we thought we would have in August.
Yeah, this plus Duke Williams at his that's a different. But I mean,
you're right.
Those three guys make a huge difference.
So. Yeah, yeah. If we had Duke back playing, you know, like we expected to, this team would be. Because I mean, you know, how many times in the last several games, you know, while Ricardo Lewis has made some great plays and he'll go down in history as one of our more memorable receivers, certainly in some ways. But I mean, how many times has he blown a catch?
Yep.
And I mean, if we'd had Duke out there playing the way we expected. So you're right. This still isn't the team we thought we would have. It's still a couple of steps below what we thought we would get. You know, plus Byron Cowart hasn't been kind of what we hoped he would be.
Yep.
But on the other hand, Carlton Davis has been better than we thought he'd be, I think it's fair to say. And our kicking game has been better than we really could have honestly hoped it would be.
Yeah, the special teams were bad last year, and this year they're just excellent. Just really, really good.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, Javon Robinson, here's the funny thing about Javon Robinson. Well, first, he's alive and still on our team, so that's a that's an update. But also, it was kind of funny. My wife and I were watching it middle of the night, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was kind of trying to explain to her what was going on with Javon. I said, you can kind of see what the problem was, I think, because between plays, it seemed like Javon Robinson had no idea what was going on or where he was supposed to be. Did you notice that?
A little bit. I mean, there were people having to get him lined up.
Oh, I mean, so. He would go off the field. He'd come back on the field. The quarterback would be, you know, Jeremy would be yelling at him. He went off and came on the same play like twice.
Yes.
He didn't know where to stand. I mean, this far into the season, he still just seems like he doesn't exactly know what he's doing out there between plays. But during the play, I think he knows what to do.
Yes.
Run the ball for 15 yards a carry, basically, which is what he was doing a lot of the time.
He knows what he's doing in that department.
Yeah, if you can get him in the right place and tell him he is supposed to be on the field right now and not off the field, once that's all kind of squared away and you snap the ball, he's good to go.
I mean, he's really good. He breaks tackles. He's got great kind of body lean. He puts his shoulders forward and leans down. And so when he gets hit and he gets tackled, he's gaining that extra 2 to 3 yards. And he's, you know, he's getting away from people. He gets through the hole and he's getting away from people and getting extra yards. So he's really good. I was trying to think of who he reminds me of.
I'll tell you the first person came to my mind watching him last night. Emmitt Smith.
I don't know about that.
I mean, in terms of he doesn't seem to be going as fast as he is. And he doesn't seem to be, you know, people are jumping on him and you think he's going to go down and he still goes for 3 or 4 more yards. That reminded me of Emmitt a little bit.
Stacy Danley?
Well, no. Danley was tall and lean and kind of had a Eric Dickerson style to him. But I mean, the thing that I thought of this last night and almost forgot it, but I just remembered it. Every running back that we've ever had has got something distinctive about him. I mean, you know, with Trey, he was almost so little but squat, that he would just kind of squirt through a hole and then explode. You give him a tiny little crack and he'd slip through it, and then he'd go from speed to power and blast through somebody and then go back to speed again. It was a really unique combination. Here's the thing that I keep seeing every time Javon Robinson goes. Now, he has a good first step where he got a good cut, right? He was doing this a lot where he'd take a step one way, kind of go the other, and could find a running lane by getting the defense to kind of go the wrong way. But the other thing that Javon Robinson does that was kind of making my eyes bug out a little bit is when he'd get into the linebackers, okay, he'd get through the defensive line, he'd get into the middle, that intermediate range, right? He'd get into the linebackers, and maybe two guys would jump on his back,
mm-hmm.
and most average running backs would kind of like go down within a step or two. Javon has got like wheels on his stomach and his chest. He's like one of those two wheelers at Walmart that you can lean down, and it has the little wheels that you can set it down like a cart, or you can mm-hmm. raise it up to carry like a stack of six packs on, right? He's got like invisible little wheels on his torso so that when you land on his back and he goes down on his stomach, he just keeps going forward like he's rolling like an 18 wheeler, just rolling. That was really interesting to me.
I mean, that's what I was saying about the body lean, that he leans yeah. forward when he runs, and so when they're hitting him, he's still going forward yes. and he's still getting yards, and it's impressive.
It's like he's carrying the defense on his back, and he's almost horizontal, but he's not on the ground. He's just kind of floating along above the ground for another 2 or 3 yards or more. I tell you, you know, one day when he has grandkids, he can pile like 6 grandkids on his back and then just like carry them all, you know, across the yard. That'll be awesome. So Javon was pretty impressive. Looked pretty neat. See, and you know what? I tweeted this. I said, isn't it amazing how much smarter Gus and Rhett are when you have a running back that can do that?
It makes everybody look better. Makes the whole offense run better.
Because you remember my tirade the last week or
yes,
two?
Yes, I do.
If you have a running back that can crank out yardage, everything else is better. Your time of possession is better. The defense is not on the field as much. You don't have to rely as much on throwing the ball all over the place with a shaky passing game. Everything is better. That was all I was trying to say. And I think we saw that play out in College Station.
Yep.
Let's see. Other things going on. Ricardo, like I said, still kind of hot and cold. I just don't know. We wanted to talk about the perimeter running game. Ricardo had some good power sweep runs, didn't he?
Yeah. And one of the first times this season, we were really going back to that. And we really did kind of open them up at the beginning of the game, going kind of left, right with that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wearing out their starters a little bit, and then hitting them with Javon up the middle. And Ricardo was a big part of that, the yards that he got going side to side.
So what did you think about our horizontal running game, for lack of a better term?
Well, I mean, again, you know this. There are teams in the SEC that'll work against, and there are teams that it won't. That, you know, against LSU, that is going to get you a big zero.
Yeah.
But against that team is fine. They don't have the speed or athleticism that LSU has on the outside and the secondary and stuff. So you could do that all day long, and I thought it was great. And it really kept them off balance, and it kept their secondary guys, you know, watching for that. And then it also kind of pulled guys out of the box a little bit. So then we came back to running Javon up the middle. It had more success, I thought.
Yeah. While we're talking about plays that start out going horizontal, what about and you mentioned creative play calling here, and that's exactly where I was going too. For those of you kind of want to know the inside baseball of this football show, John has like a little list of things he wants to talk about. I have a list of things I want to talk about, and I kind of try to match them up while we're talking here, just so we don't duplicate. And we both, I think, really want to talk about that trick play.
It was great.
That was Arkansas against us 2006, remember?
And apparently we ran it in the SEC championship game.
Which one? 2013?
Yes, supposedly.
All I remember from that game is Trey Mason running up and down the field like the defense hadn't remembered to be on the field. So.
Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, yeah, the Arkansas one is the one everybody remembers to me.
Yeah.
The guy hiding back there and killing us. But it's a great play, and that guy is so small.
He is.
And it just comes running out of there, and even, you know, the cameraman was fooled. It was really good.
So. I know when Maddie got up this morning, she went to bed. She wasn't going to stay up and watch it last night. And I said, wait, come here. You got to see this. And I fast-forwarded, and somehow I happened to find it within a couple of minutes, and I showed it to her, and she was like, whoa. I mean, even people that don't really know football can see that, and it's just kind of mind-boggling. It was such a cool play. And the thing was, too, they ran it at just the right time because it was first and 25.
Uh-huh.
And it went for like 28 yards or something.
It really was. It was the right place on the field. It was the right time in the game when they were looking for it. We had the whole offense going the other way. The other thing that I just think is funny is that they apparently I think James Crepia wrote a column about it today, or an article about it, that play. And the play is called Woody after the guy in Toy Story.
Oh,
so
okay.
When they call it, the players all say, "There's a snake in my boot."
That's genius. All right. Well, it looks so cool. I love they do the little sugar huddle and they come up to the line. I mean, you knew something was going on because we never come up to the line like that.
No,
we had one receiver out wide and we had one guy back. And I think my favorite thing about it was watch it, because I watched it again this morning showing Maddie. My favorite thing about it was the defensive end the defensive end for Texas A&M, one of the noobs, came charging up the field after Jeremy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as the camera shows him bearing down on Jeremy, you see the guy with the ball, one of the Davises, right?
Yep.
We got like 18.
Ryan Davis.
Ryan Davis with the ball already running down the field behind, I mean, like 180 degrees behind him. And you could just imagine the look on the A&M guy's face when he looks at Jeremy and realizes Jeremy doesn't have the ball and it's already behind, the play is already 10 yards behind him and receding rapidly. You know, objects in his rearview mirror are further than they appear. So that was pretty awesome. Okay, what about the Auburn offensive line?
I thought they had a great game. I mean, the big thing was in the game plan and the execution of it, we did not have very many, if any at all, third and longs. We didn't have a bunch of third nines where the defensive ends for Texas A&M could have teed off. And that was a huge problem last year in this game where Myles Garrett caused all kinds of problems and Sean Coleman had a bad day. The Auburn offensive line had an excellent game. I mean, Texas A&M had zero sacks. And we got great push for the run game. Really, maybe the best game they played this year. Going up against some really, really good defensive ends. They did not cause a lot of problems. They weren't making plays in the backfield. So, I mean, the tackles, especially for Auburn, you got to give them a lot of credit in this game. And we were opening up holes for the running game. And A&M gives up some running yards, but it was a very impressive performance by the offensive line. Again, on the road in a big, loud stadium at the beginning, anyhow. So,
well, here's some quick numbers on that I think worth throwing out there. Javon Robinson up the middle for the most part, or over off tackle or whatever, had 27 for 159 with a long of 45, which was awesome, by the way, that run. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a 45-yard run in a long time.
Yep.
Ricardo doing his thing, kind of horizontal, 6 for 43. Davis, the 1 for 28 we talked about. Jason Smith had 1 for 24.
Carry on.
Oh, that's pitiful. Hold on a minute. I had the volume turned down for what we were doing a while ago. Carry on, Johnson.
Carry on, my there.
You gotta have that. Come on. He's not gonna be at Auburn forever, man. He had 3 for 19, which were mostly off tackle around the end. He doesn't really kind of go up the middle like a fullback. But here's the thing I thought was interesting, and I want your views on this. Is Peyton Barber still banged up because he had 13? Do you believe Peyton Barber had 13 carries in that game? I didn't think he had that many carries, but
they were giving Javon breaks at a certain point. I mean,
well, he had 13 carries for 41 yards, but I always like to look inside the numbers on that and see what the long was. Mm-hmm. His long was 15. So you take that one away, he had 12 carries for 26 yards.
Yep.
That's like, what, barely 2 yards a carry?
Mm-hmm.
Man. So what do you think about Peyton? Is he's got to be just banged up a little bit. He could barely play last week, right, or a week before.
I mean, some of it is he's hurt. Some of it is that Robinson's more effective right now, and they're going to keep riding him. And we've seen Barber is effective when he gets 30 carries and he can get to the second half and they're wearing the other team down. That's when he gets better and better. He was never – yeah. In any game this year, he's not effective at the beginning of the game, yeah. You know, in the first 10 or 15 carries. So that's his game, that's his style. And so it makes him tough to use as a complimentary running back. But, you know, We ran for over 300 yards on the road in an SEC game, which is something, sure, you know, was huge. And he was a part of that in sparing carries for Javon and also picking up tough yards. So,
well, sure,
a couple of those were yards, you know, runs that were third and short kind of things, I think, too.
Yeah, he was doing better than 2 yards a carry all the way up through the Arkansas game. I mean, he torched Arkansas pretty solid, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
And had like 4 or 5 touchdowns.
He had a very good game against him.
Yeah, but then he got banged up. My gosh, half the team got banged up in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, after, you know, last week, obviously Sean was hobbled. He was hobbled. So, well, anyway, let's see. A&M rushed. They had a guy for 109, a guy for 37, a guy for 11. That's about it. So we really did shut down their running game pretty solidly, it seemed like.
Well, and then the biggest one in that is the quarterback, Murray. I mean, he ran for like 150 yards against South Carolina the week before, and we completely took that away. We were not going to let him get outside and run for big gains. We forced him to stay in the pocket and throw the ball, and he couldn't handle it. And then he got knocked out of the game. So then at that point, the threat of the, you know, the running quarterback was over. But the defense, that it was very much like the stuff we used to see against Nick Marshall, where the defensive ends would kind of stand out there and wait for him and not, you know, not rush blindly up the field like you do against some of the more, you know, the quarterbacks that just kind of more statues. So,
right, right. Well, you know, the other thing I guess we need to address about the game is the red zone. Well, we get to talk about the defense too, but the red zone, I mean, it's so frustrating that it's been going on for like half of last season and then all of this season so far, is we just can't – we get down inside the 20 and nothing seems to work anymore. What's the problem?
I mean, again, every offense is the same in this. Offense is harder inside the red zone. The defense doesn't have to worry about you going over their head and getting a 60-yard play, so they're all up closer to the line of scrimmage. The safeties can be up closer, and that enables guys to come up there and reinforce much quicker than when they're worried you're going to go, you know, throw it over their heads down the field. So they start out closer to the line of scrimmage, and then also, you know, if you get close to the red zone, traditionally you'd like to be able to just line up and run and power them out of the way. But because the safeties are up closer, they basically can have, you know, 2 extra guys in the box to help stop the run, which you'd really like to have. This is a crazy thing. Is like a really big physical wide receiver who could like shield the defenders off with his body and catch the ball with his hands, you know, out away from the defenders and take it away.
Yeah.
That kind of guy is very handy in the red zone.
You know, I thought we were going to have that, but I don't know whatever happened. It's strange.
But we don't have that on the team right now.
No.
And so, you know, that makes throwing – you don't do the stuff where you're throwing fades and that kind of stuff in the end zone. That's a very low percentage kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so we end up trying to run to the corners or throw little passes where we've got the guy diving for the pylon and stuff at the corner and stuff, not going – the other thing that really helps in that part of the field, if you have it, is like a really big physical tight end.
Yeah,
that you could do a play action with and have the tight end going in the center of the defense and catch the ball. But we don't have that kind of guy either. So that's part of it, I think. And we also don't have so much the threat of like a run pass option where the past couple of years we'd have Nick Marshall kind of roll out.
Man.
And there's the receivers out there and the defender has to worry. Is he going to go back and get the receivers? Is he going to run towards Nick Marshall? And then it's kind of a pick your poison thing, but we don't have that option either. So,
isn't it interesting how every time, like it seems like every week, we realize how much we miss Nick Marshall more.
It's true.
I mean, the things he did seem so effortless that we look back now and realize, you know, because he could get in the end zone, he could get the ball in the end zone. That was one thing he could do, and sometimes just running in from like 30 yards out, he would just run right on in. And you don't realize, you just take it for granted, like, okay, Nick scored a touchdown. Yeah, that was pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
I think also what you were talking about made me think of this. I think there's a substantial amount of the success we're having on offense lately is stuff that Gus and Red are basically manufacturing using bits and pieces. They are duct taping and baling wiring together an offense.
Well, I mean,
and
I think
the problem is that once that gets down inside the 20, the things that they're, you know, gluing together aren't as effective in that, you know, for the reasons that you gave. But I mean, it's not like we have an overpowering, you know, run game yet, or an overpowering passing game, or an option run game that's unstoppable like 2013. And so the things that we're having to cobble together to make the team go down the field don't work as well once we get in the 20.
I think that's accurate.
All right. Well, last thing about the game, the defense. What did you think
I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, the defense did a great job. They had a great plan to contain Kyler Murray, and they executed it, and they forced him to throw the ball, and then they created turnovers. Like you said, Carlton Davis made a great play in the interception in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be so good. But also, I mean, the tackling was really good. There weren't a lot of missed tackles, especially they had really good receivers. That Kirk guy's, Christian Kirk's a really good player who's going to, you know, put up a lot of yards on a lot of SEC teams, and he couldn't do anything against us. And then, I thought the defensive line had a good game. They were smart, stuffing the run and just kind of containing Murray. Trey Matthews didn't play, so we had Nick Ruffin and Steven Roberts playing a lot of safety, and they made a few plays. So I was pretty happy with it.
All right. A, what was wrong with Trey Matthews?
He's been banged up for a couple weeks, and so he sat out. So.
Okay, and B, who is this Roberts guy? I'm like, my wife is like, well, who is that guy? I'm like, you know, I honestly don't know, and I thought I knew everybody on the team.
I mean, they're both sophomores. Nick Ruffin and Steven Roberts were both defensive back recruits, not from this February, but from a year ago. I think Roberts is actually from Opelika. I could be wrong. But
okay. Huh. So. Yeah, I just wasn't familiar with him at all. I'm like, oh, okay, that guy. You know, the way I characterize this defense, you've heard of bend, don't break. This defense is bend, don't break, and then make a big play.
That's fair, but I'm going to say this defense is better. I mean, this defense is so much better than it was, you know, 6 or 7 weeks ago. Yeah. It really, really is. It's getting better every single week. It was, better. The Ole Miss game than it was against Arkansas. It's much better against A&M than it was against Ole Miss. And I think you can see it. The defense is getting there.
Well, I guess the question is, how much better can they get in the last 3 weeks of the season?
I mean, they continue to improve. If they play at the level they played against A&M, we have a chance to beat Idaho and Georgia for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
And it'll keep us in the game against Alabama if they play that well. I can tell you that. So
I'm looking forward to Georgia. Honestly, I am. And I didn't think I would say that a few weeks ago. Okay, couple of things. Interesting conversation this afternoon with Jerry Hinnan, our friend from CBS and from War Eagle Reader. He was sort of conversing with another national sports writer about how good of a staff you'd have if you had Tuberville as the head coach, Gus is the offensive coordinator, and Chizik is the defensive coordinator. And I pointed out that in 2002, we almost had that, except we had Petrino instead of Gus, right? We had Tuberville as the head coach, Petrino as the offensive coordinator, Chizik as the defense coordinator. And I was like, but we only won 9 games. But then I got to thinking about it, and that 2002 team, do you realize they went 9-4, but they were not only one play away from playing in the SEC championship game, they were also one play away in 3 games from being 12-1 and playing in the SEC championship.
That was a 9-4 team, but nobody in America wanted to play that team.
No. And it's a team that was so banged up at the end of the year that we started Trey Smith as running back and beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I still revel every now and then in digging out the Alabama fan reactions.
The message boards from that day are the best.
Oh, they're so good.
It's gold.
That game we lost to Southern Cal in the opening game on the final drive, one play. We lost to Florida in Gainesville in overtime, one play. And, of course, we lost to Georgia on the infamous XZ takeoff or whatever it's called, where they threw the ball to Michael Jackson on the very last play. And I think that I may be wrong about this. Something may have happened since then, but at least for the longest time, that was the only time in SEC championship game history that both teams that were going to appear in Atlanta changed because of one play. It was going to be Auburn versus Florida. And when Georgia scored that, they beat out Florida and Arkansas beat us out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Georgia-Arkansas instead of Auburn-Florida. And then, of course, the other game that year is Arkansas. Nobody can explain what happened there.
No.
Another question somebody brought up that I want to address really quickly. Somebody said, how can we possibly go from the top to the bottom twice in 5 or 6 years? Because we were at the bottom of the SEC West. If not currently, we were going into the game Saturday. And that's a valid question. How do you go from the top to the bottom twice in 5 or 6 years? And I think that it's something you and I have talked about. That's why this struck a chord with me, is it's something that you and I have talked about, is that it's so close, right? You can be the best team in the SEC West and then have one or two little things go wrong and you can be last.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much to knock you from the bottom to the top to the bottom. And then fix those things and be back on top again.
I think that's fair, but I think you're going to see this with Mississippi State when Dak Prescott leaves.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're playing really well right now. They may be the second best team in the West right now, today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, when he leaves next year, the drop-off is going to be gigantic.
Well, that's the thing, is that teams like Mississippi State and Auburn, we don't have, you know, stacked 8-deep 5-star recruits like Alabama does. And so Alabama can lose some of those key players and just reload, as they say, and only have a little drop-off. Whereas if we don't keep stocked with those exceptional players every year, there's a big danger of a drop-off.
Well, and Auburn's recruited really well. But the other thing that goes into that is experience. The reason Mississippi State was so good last year is they had so many experienced guys in the roster. And I think Auburn lost a lot of experience on both sides of the ball. And it's one of the reasons this team kind of is just finding its legs, is because, you know, we've lost 14 guys on that played in the team last year playing in the NFL right now. So
And that brings up the third thing. If you talk about it, it's so close, and then a few key players. I think the third thing is chemistry, and chemistry is a tricky thing. You can't manufacture it; it has to happen. You can create an environment where it can be more likely to happen, right? More conducive to it. But good chemistry on a team kind of has to just sort of form by having good guys, you know, good players, well coached, give them good environment, and then hope that nothing goes wrong and nobody poisons it. So my point is, there's just a very tiny few number of factors that really make a huge difference between dominating the division and being at the bottom. And it really can fluctuate very easily every year. One other thing I wanted to mention before we get into the factoid of the week and listener questions real quick is, you don't even know this. We've talked about it briefly, but given our problems with Skype, and oh, if our, listeners only knew the ordeal we go through every week trying to connect with Skype.
It's a challenge.
It is a challenge. I'm thinking that after the season is over, when we go back to our biweekly setup, I'm thinking about rigging up a whole new studio in the palatial White Rocket Entertainment offices and maybe getting us a video component.
Okay.
So people can be able to watch us on YouTube, or they can listen to us on iTunes or wherever else, Podbean or however else they get it. I'm thinking about that just because it gives us a whole new venue, a new audience and all that. Also working on a new web page that'll bring all of our stuff together. So we'll see what we can come up with all that maybe during the Christmas break. Let's see. Is it time for Factoid of the Week?
It is.
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
This one is, I'm blatantly stealing it from friend of the show, Brandon Marcello. And,
I'm Brandon Marcello.
Hey, thank you, Brandon. And here it is. It's short and sweet, and it's kind of startling. Auburn will not play a road game again in the regular season until October 8th of next year at Mississippi State.
That's good.
That's like almost a year. We don't have another road game until the second week of the second month of next season. That's a lot of home games in a row.
It is.
It's too bad we don't have like the Auburn Bowl so we could even play our bowl game at home. We may need it the way.
Well, listen, you're laughing. We may go to the Birmingham Bowl. So.
We're playing Georgia to either go to the Birmingham Bowl or like the Weed Eater Bowl, right?
Or Music City or something.
Well, like I think Music City is a little ambitious for a 6-6, 7-5 team now. But we'll see. The Birmingham Bowl thinks 6-6 teams are great. That's like their wheelhouse. They're like, 6-6, you guys are awesome. Come to Birmingham. Woohoo! Okay, so that was our factoid, and that was short and sweet. I've rearranged the soundboard, and now I can't find anything.
It's time for listener questions. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, let's fire them up.
All right, first question comes from Albis, who says, assume Sean White is healthy. Who starts a quarterback versus Georgia?
I've thought about this a little bit. If I knew that Jeremy would come out and play the way he did against Texas A&M.
You don't get to know that.
I know.
Sean White is healthy. You have to tap one guy in the helmet and say, go on the field. You're the starter. Who are you going to pick?
Oh, God. Now, I know that 90% of our listeners are like, well, that's easy, Sean White. But honestly, Jeremy brings something to him, right? I mean, he's tall. He's big. He's commanding now that he's stopped being kind. You know, I said it before. The worst thing that happened to Jeremy Johnson, I think, was being around Nick Marshall. Because what works for Nick does not work for Jeremy. Nick is Mr. Nick was Mr. Cold, cool, collected, nothing, unruffled feathers, And Jeremy, there he is. Jeremy tried to emulate that, and I don't blame him. That's cool, but it didn't work for Jeremy. Jeremy needed some fire and energy. Wasn't Jeremy a lot more? To watch Saturday.
Well, and I thought one of the biggest things I saw in the whole game was before Auburn even snapped the ball on their first play, when Jeremy Johnson came out on the field, he was talking to the offense.
Yeah.
And he was getting everybody fired up, and he was clearly personally fired up. And it wasn't that calm, cool, reserved. It was – he was getting in people's faces, yelling and saying, let's go. And I thought it was great. I mean, it was really, really – it was not the way he has been in the other games this season, and it was really good to see.
He needs to do that, yeah.
Yep.
What works for one person does not work for another, and I think he's a young guy. He needed to learn that, and I think he has. And that's probably some coaches have pointed out, and I think that's really good. But still, what do you think?
We got a lot more questions here.
What do you think? This is a good question. What do you think?
I think the coaches are going to pick Jeremy.
I do too.
I mean, I think that's what they're going to pick. If it was me and Sean White was 100% healthy, I might pick Sean White. But the coaches are going to pick Jeremy. That's going to happen. So you just prepare yourself. But I mean, I understand it because I think we said this at the beginning of the year. I think Jeremy has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
If he plays at his best level, his ceiling is higher than Sean White's.
Yeah, and that doesn't take anything away from Sean. It's just Jeremy's a 6'5", big guy, and that works when it works. Oh, and it's the Danny Werfel effect. That's what I wanted to mention a minute ago. It's the Danny Werfel effect. Remember Terry Dean comes out and throws deep against us and keeps throwing interceptions. Spurrier yanks him off the field, puts in Danny Werfel. Does he tell Danny Werfel to start chucking it down the field? No. He's throwing screens. He's dumping it off the running backs. He never throws a pass more than 10, 15 yards down the field the first few times he has the ball. Why Spurrier didn't do that for Terry Dean, I don't know. But he did it for Danny Werfel, and it worked perfectly. And I think that that's that's kind of what they did with Jeremy. They put Jeremy out there and did him the Danny Werfel treatment. Don't throw it deep unless, you know, only a couple of times, you know. But generally just control passing game, short, you know, keep it under control, throw it to the right color jersey, right. You know. That's
a lot more questions.
Okay.
All right.
It might not all be as good as this, though.
We had a lot more good ones here.
But this is the topic of the week.
Listen, this topic is coming. We're coming back to this.
All right.
All right. Emily Rios says she's got three questions. I'm going to ask you the first one. She says, stupid refs aside, when was the last time you enjoyed a game from start to finish this much?
It
had to be last year's LSU game?
Yeah, probably. This is the last time we were in control of a game from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. She says, were the red zone issues after the first two touchdowns more of the same problems from Auburn or more because of the Chavis's defense?
No, I think we still just can't get it working. We talked about it, so.
Yeah. Somebody else asked about Jeremy or Sean. Peter Michael Green says, assuming we beat the mighty Idaho Vandals, what's your bowl projection and what opponent?
Well, I said Georgia Tech in the Birmingham Bowl last week.
Oh, my gosh.
You said Tech's not going to qualify for the Birmingham Bowl.
I could be wrong. But I'll do some research on that this week. I'm honestly, until we beat one of these teams, I wasn't going to look at the bowl options. So.
Yeah, let's look around at what other teams are about 5-5 right now, 5-4, 4-5, and who they have left on their schedule. At least it won't be Clemson.
Nope, it will not. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
You don't need to play Wisconsin either. I'm good.
No.
All right. What about
Nebraska?
They're not going to make a bowl game.
Dang. They beat Michigan State. They're not going to make a bowl game.
No.
Dang.
Before they beat Michigan State, they were about to fire their coach.
Yeah.
They
shouldn't have hired him. It was stupid. Okay, go ahead.
No, it wasn't stupid.
You know what, Nebraska?
Blame yourself. All right. A Tweep says, Auburn just landed a JUCO dual threat quarterback commit we haven't really talked about tonight.
Yeah.
Should we stick with White or Johnson or change to a dual threat QB in 2016?
Well, somebody said, what does that message send to the – what message does that send to our current quarterbacks? I said it sends them the message that they're not a dual threat quarterback and we got to do something quick.
Well, but the fundamental question is, does this offense have to have a dual threat quarterback to succeed?
No, it just doesn't have to have all the running backs get hurt in the first quarter of the first game.
Well, and it has to have
no defense for six games.
Well, and again, it has to have competent quarterback play.
Yes.
It doesn't have to have – the Nick Marshall thing was great, but it just has to have competent quarterback play. We ran up tons of yards with freaking Chris Todd.
I told you the best quarterback on the Auburn sideline every week has really – other than Damian Craig, honestly, I think he could strap it on and go right out there and be awesome. Other than Damian Craig, the best quarterback on the Auburn sideline has been Ryan Applin. And he was not what you'd call a dual threat, awesome athlete, you know, but Gus made him a winner in his 1 year at Arkansas State. That's why he's at Auburn now as an assistant, a graduate assistant.
Ross Hatcher says, targeting, what is it really? Will the world ever know?
They'll never, never know.
That was targeting, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every time that you ask a referee to explain it, he simply says,
I don't have facts to back this up.
So there you go.
Yeah. All right. WDET to you says, my question for y'all and Reynolds Wolf is, if we win out, can we forget about October and be happy with November?
We did have an unfortunate October surprise, didn't we? You want to hear Reynolds' answer first? I have it.
Sure.
Okay. I have a new introduction for when somebody asks Reynolds a question.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf.
That's it.
All right.
And I had to work with what I got to work with here. Okay. Here's Reynolds' reply. 8-4? ? Happy with it? ? Absolutely! 3 exclamation points. but it's all about reasserting and readjusting goals and expectations. Consider this. From the opening kickoff against Louisville, so many of us expected to win or strongly contend for the West. We felt a shot at a potential seed in the playoffs was within reach. Our performance against JSU startled us, but the LSU contest was the true wake-up call. That game was lost before the wheels of the team plane touched down in Baton Rouge. We weren't prepared mentally or physically, and we truly lacked any sense of identity. But things began to stir in October. Despite the weekly adjustments of personnel, injuries, dismissals, questionable play calling, and additional losses, we've seen these players and coaches rally. They haven't given up. Hell, if anything, they've gained resolve and focus. It's been great to witness this transformation, and last Saturday night in the cold wind and rain in College Station, we saw the greatest development of all, and this is in all capital letters, they finally seem to be having fun.
It's true.
So yes, 8-4 would rule, but if they end up 6-6 and play hard the rest of the way, I'll be happy.
Amen. All right.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf.
And that's the word from Reynolds.
A couple more questions. A couple more people asking the same question, Sean White or Jeremy. Wardam Wade asked a good question. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm very happy for Jeremy, but is there any reason to think that if Sean White was healthy and he started, would he have done the same thing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think Sean would have done just as well, don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Scott Schrader photo says, this is the team we were expecting to see. Is the identity crisis over, or are we just starting with the impending quarterback controversy?
Quarterback controversy, no. I think that Gus will go strong and hard one way. I mean, because clearly, if Sean couldn't even practice last week, it's not like he's going to be out there starting again over a healthy and playing well Jeremy Johnson, right? So I don't think we got a controversy.
All right. Doug Plan says, would the read option part of this offense be better suited with two traditional tight ends to block instead of four receivers? I mean, tight ends would help, but we don't have any right now that can play.
Do we even have any receivers right now? We got to go out and bring in some receivers this year.
We need more receivers, and we need better receivers. But, I mean, Tony Stevens is okay. Yeah. Marcus Davis is okay.
Yeah.
We
lose Ricardo, right?
Yeah, he's a senior. So, we'll see. All right, Auburn Elvis has a question.
Yay.
We've been waiting since 2009 for Gus to run the hidden running back play he burned Auburn with back in the 2006 Arkansas game.
Yes.
Was the issue we never had a running back short enough for it to work?
Man, McCaleb could have tore it up with that play, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
We should have
run that him with it.
Oh, man.
He was so dangerous, the defense always knew where he was.
That's true.
Part of the reason this play worked is the defense had no idea who that guy was.
I didn't have any idea who he was. I knew he had some Davises and all. But he's exactly right. Remember, we've been setting it up since 2009. That means that it's time to do something. Hey, we didn't do the hurry up, run up the middle on second down. Or first down or whatever.
Ding, 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 ding.
Woohoo!
That's an excellent point. We ran the hurry up, especially early in the game, but we did not do the first down dive into the middle thing.
Oh, good
we
Lord.
We broke it up, and I think that was a huge part of it.
They've been setting up not doing that for how many years now, and we finally sprang it on them.
Yep,
we sprang it on them, John. They weren't prepared.
All right, the last question, his second question is, after the mind-blowing targeting reversal, am I right thinking no Lee County jury would convict me for crimes against these officials?
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing we didn't talk about was that ridiculous targeting thing. So I'm sure if it had been one of our players doing it, they'd have thrown him out without even thinking twice. So
there you go.
All right, let's talk about the UGA game.
Well, it looks like they're going to share time with Grayson Lambert and Bryce Ramsey.
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
And despite Auburn fans' fears, Nick Chubb is not getting up off that table and walking through the door.
How is that not happening? That's impossible.
Nick Chubb is not walking through that door in a Georgia uniform, despite your worst fear. So all they really have is Sony Michel. And Sony Michel
is not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robin Parrish is not walking through that door.
Sorry, if I'd been quicker, you wouldn't have been interrupted, but I can't ever find it. I'm going to redo the soundboard. I can't find anything on it anymore. It's just a mess.
So they have one running back, Sony Michel, and Sony Michel is imagine like Kerryon Johnson a year from now.
Yeah,
that's Sony Michel. So he's really good. He's dangerous, but you know he's more of a he's not really a pound it between the tackles kind of guy.
Yeah.
They beat Kentucky to a pulp Saturday, but they did it at home and they did it by running the ball like 55 times. They protected their quarterbacks and they ran it. And I think that's what we're going to try to do against us. They're not going to take a bunch of chances. I think they're not going to put it on their quarterbacks. They're going to try and run the ball and play defense and beat us that way.
You know his little brother that's coming up? No. Samsung?
Oh, gosh.
Clearly his parents are big fans of Japanese consumer electronics. He's got a cousin named Curtis Mathis. But anyway, what's going on at Georgia? I mean, are they going to just pitch? Are they going to do a parking lot firing of Rick if he loses to us?
No. I mean, he's earned enough credit there with the administration and the people that they, you know, if they get rid of him, they're going to do it with some dignity. But there was rumors this week, you know, the things were ugly. There was a fight with Pruitt and Rick tweeted out that Pruitt's here working on the defensive game plan. So the interesting dynamic there is that, you know, everybody thinks it's just because Schottenheimer's terrible and the offense is bad. You can blame Schottenheimer all you want. He hasn't been in charge of recruiting a quarterback the last 4 years.
That's right. Okay?
There is not a quarterback on that roster.
And that's so weird, too, because they always have, like, the hot, young, up-and-coming gunslinger. Mm-hmm. They always do.
And they don't. I mean, they thought Bryce Ramsey's going to be that guy, but he's not. He's not any good. So, quarterbacks from all over the country, you know, should probably be looking at Georgia as a place to go. You're right. They've had a really, really sustained run of success at quarterback position.
Yeah,
they don't have those guys. But they're down everywhere. Their receivers aren't as good. Without Chubb, the running backs aren't as good. And the defense is good, but it's not nearly as good as it was like 2 years ago. So I think they're solid, but we can beat this team if Auburn plays like it did on Saturday.
Yeah, well, how'd they look against Kentucky? I didn't get to see any of that.
I mean, they beat Kentucky to a pulp, but Kentucky played terrible and turned the ball over. And again, Georgia just ran it. They didn't ask the quarterbacks to do anything, and that was good enough. And the Georgia defense played much better than it did against Florida. But again, it's – you know, it was Kentucky, it was in Athens, and, you know, they played it very conservative and ran the ball all over them, and that was enough. So, but, I mean, I think, I think we can move the ball on them. I think we can run the ball on them, and I think our defense can handle it. It's not, we're not worried about the quarterback coming out and throwing it all over the field. They're going to try and run it straight at us, and it's not Leonard Fournette. So,
well, here's what we need to do. We need to suit Trey Matthews up and put him on the same side of the field as Ricardo Lewis, throw a pass at Trey, bank it off Trey, lands in Ricardo's hands.
A miracle at Jordan Hare! A miracle at Jordan Hare!
There you go.
I hope it doesn't come down to a miracle.
Hope it doesn't, right. But, I mean, we could run that play every series, you know.
We could. We could send them both deep down the field.
So how do you feel about this game? You think we're going to win?
I do. I mean, I think, again, Auburn is playing better. Georgia is, you know, improved from the Florida game, but they're way down from where they were early in the season.
Yeah.
We can beat them on the road. I don't think they have a lot of confidence. Their quarterbacks aren't very good. You know, I don't think they could score a ton of points against us, and then we can win the game.
I think the series with Georgia is back to being tied again.
I don't know about that. But.
No, I think it's like 55-55 and 6 or something. I think it's back to being tied because Pat Dye, you know, pulled out like a 4 or 5 game lead on them, and now Richt has run off 4 or 5 back, you know, on us. And so I think it's back to being tied again. I really do. And I mean, I would like to get back in charge of the series, and I'd like to knock Richt off a little bit because, as you know, he's about my least favorite coach in the SEC, with all due respect to the little general in Tuscaloosa.
I mean, again, here's Georgia's last few games, okay? They got crushed by Alabama. They scored 10 points. You know, they lost to Tennessee at Tennessee in a kind of a shootout, all right? They beat Missouri 9-6. Florida killed them, 27-3.
Yep.
Okay. And then they came back and beat Kentucky pretty solidly, but you know, it's, Kentucky had a terrible game, and it was in Athens. So, you know, their last few SEC games, three out of their last, you know, five SEC games has scored 10 points or less.
Here you go. 118 games played, 55, 55, and 8.
All right.
It is currently tied. You want to take a trip?
Yep.
Let's see.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Yay. Well, I guess we got to talk about the Alabama-LSU debacle.
Well, it went exactly like we expected it to. I mean, we called it last week.
We did.
Alabama does one thing really well, and it stopped the run. LSU's offense is very predictable. I mean, it's Fournette, you know, and they weren't going to come out and do anything different or tricky. They were going to try and, you know, run Fournette right at Alabama. They had no success, and that was it. So
that was it, all right. So, yeah, the rock, paper, scissors. I need to get the audio clip from Big Bang of a rock, paper, scissors lizard Spock. Man, I just can't – I didn't get to see hardly any of this game, and I fell asleep when I did turn it on. But what did they do to Fournette? Are they just that good on the defensive front that he couldn't get any running room at all?
Well, I mean, again, they didn't try and spread him out. They tried to, you know, do strength on strength and push people out of the line. Then Alabama, you know, basically put 7-8 guys in the box and said, you know, we know you're getting the ball. And they were standing there waiting on him. So, I mean, they're really good at stopping the run. And they knew Fournette was going to get the ball. LSU, you know, should have come in there, run some play action early in the game and done some different tricky kind of stuff. And they tried to just come out and do their regular run the ball right at you stuff and had no success. So,
that's Les Miles, though. I mean,
It is.
He's just
smashing. They thought their offensive line could push Alabama around and get some yards for him, but
apparently not.
No.
Arkansas, Ole Miss. What made Burt decide to
Hey Beavis? What?
What made him decide to go for two early this time, and he didn't against us?
I mean, maybe it was because he was on the road, but also because it was a freaking miracle they were there. If you saw the play where it was fourth and like 20, and they lateraled it backwards, and the guy ran around the left hand side, and that was a ridiculous, ridiculous play. Yeah. And what makes me so freaking mad is that play is going to put Alabama in the SEC championship game.
That
ridiculous Arkansas play is what's going to be make if that hadn't happened. Mm. If Ole Miss had tackled that guy or knocked the ball down or whatever, then it'd be over, and Ole Miss would win, and Ole Miss could beat LSU, and then they go to the SEC championship game, and Alabama doesn't. But because of that stupid lateral play, 4th and 20, whatever, that Arkansas got, and then they, you know, Ole Miss went first in overtime, then Arkansas went second, and they scored, and then they, you know, went for two right away and won the game. And you got to give them credit for that.
How many seasons has Arkansas done something ridiculous late in the season that changes the team in the SEC championship game?
A lot.
A lot. Those of you who haven't followed it as long as we have, I mean, if you go back and look, it's almost like one out of every 3 years, and that may be not enough, that Arkansas does something bizarre in some game. And suddenly it's, you know, LSU instead of Alabama, or somebody else, you know, Mississippi State instead of Auburn, or just all this weird stuff. If you look back at the weird, unexpected teams that end up in Atlanta from the West, it's usually because somebody lost to Arkansas.
That's right. And Arkansas is getting better. I mean, again, they're not bad. But I think the other part of this is – there's not a lot, you know. Alabama is really good. Okay, after that, you go like LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Auburn, Texas A&M. I'd throw like Florida and Tennessee in that mix. There's not a lot of separation between those teams. Any of those teams could beat any of the other teams at home in a given week. Yeah. So,
well, speaking of those, Tennessee beat South Carolina barely, kind of a fluky in there too, wasn't it?
I didn't see a ton of that game, but I mean. Again, it was a Tennessee home game, and they were leading, so you know it was a freaking nail biter, and they tried to blow it late. So
they try. Tennessee tries hard to blow it late. They just Tennessee's so not good that they couldn't even succeed at that.
Well, the joke is that if you had Tennessee season tickets this year, you got your money's worth. There was a lot of drama. Four quarters of football in every game.
Oh my goodness, yeah, and usually followed by a loss. Georgia beat Kentucky. We talked about that. Oh, I did watch most of the Florida Vanderbilt game, and I was having it was a Twitter fiesta. Did you see any of that?
Oh yeah, that was great.
And Twitter gold.
I can't believe Vanderbilt blew that.
I can.
I'm like, Vanderbilt.
That was my most popular tweet. Was when I said everyone watching the Florida Vandy game is thinking the same thing. In what bizarre, you know, memorable fashion will Vandy blow this? And absolutely. And you know what? Well, here's the thing that's amazing about it. The one thing Vanderbilt, year in and year out, usually has is a really good punter. And I've always said it's because he gets a lot of practice, you know, because it's Vanderbilt. But they always have a good punter. Back in the 80s and 90s, Vandy usually had the all-SEC punter, as weird as that seems. And again, because he got a lot of practice. But it came down to Vanderbilt was able to stop Florida every drive until they did a 12-yard punt.
I saw that was a terrible punt.
And they gave Florida the ball just close enough to their own end zone that Florida didn't have to get many yards to get a field goal.
Yeah.
That was a difference. Ugh, gosh. Vanderbilt. How? And you know what? The other thing that reminded me of was that game reminded me of every Alabama-Vanderbilt game in the 80s and 90s.
Yes. There was some 9-6 ones in there.
Alabama, for some reason, used to just struggle with Vanderbilt every year. It was so weird. We'd beat them like 52-7, but they would struggle with Alabama. MSU and Missouri on Thursday night. Now, that's why we were saying Mississippi State looks like they're a lot better. Missouri's kind of falling apart around the edges.
Yeah, Mississippi State looks good. I mean, Dak looks very sharp. They play Alabama next week, I think, in Starkville. It's going to be fun. Good game.
Not to go into it at all other than from football purposes. Missouri's players are on strike, John.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, there's a controversy on the Missouri campus where some students have called for the president to resign, and the football players have decided to side with them, and they basically said they're not going to participate in any activities or practices or games or anything until it's resolved. So,
and it's the whole team and the coaches are supporting him in this, which is kind of interesting because they could end up forfeiting the BYU game on Saturday.
They could.
So, just something to keep an eye on to see how that plays out this week. It would be very uncomfortable if it was Auburn doing that. I'm sure I would, you know, side on the side of the bigger issue than football, but still it would be very odd to have your team on strike. And I, you know, certainly my heart, my thoughts are with the Missouri players taking a courageous stand, but also with the Missouri program. I hate to see your season, you know, kind of get, at least they're not like on the way to a national championship and this happens. I know you know what I'm saying? It's bigger than football, but still when you look at it purely from a football angle, you know, I guess it's better it happened this season than 2 years ago. You know what I mean?
Well, or would it have even happened in seasons where they're winning? I don't know. But
it's an interesting question, yeah.
But, I mean, it's still an interesting scenario, and we'll see what happens.
It's kind of unusual, yeah. Okay, coming up, we've got Florida at South Carolina. That's always fun, but you got to think Florida's going to pull this one out, right?
Yeah, it'll be a decent game, though.
Alabama, Mississippi State.
Is that... You know, we're the noon kickoff again on CBS. CBS is doing a doubleheader, but we're the noon on CBS this time.
Well, 11 o'clock for those of
11,
us.
11 Central.
And not in the Eastern Bloc.
So Alabama and Mississippi State's at 3:30 on CBS. And so I think it's going to be a good game. I think, I think Dak can throw the ball on them and make some plays, but I don't think it's going to be enough. And I don't think I don't think Mississippi State's defense could stop Alabama. The only thing I would say that gives me some hope in this game is that there was so much buildup and hype about that LSU game, and I think, you know, Bama's probably going to hear how great they are all week and how they're going to move up in the playoff rankings and all that stuff. And so I think there's going to be some real letdown potential here.
Mississippi State, if you can do this for us, all is forgiven.
Not about all of it.
But. Okay, it's not. I'm just messing with you. But a lot would be forgiven. All I'd right. think good thoughts about you for a couple of days. Kentucky at Vanderbilt. Ugh. I mean, might actually get a win here, you know?
Yeah, Vandy's playing better.
Arkansas at LSU. Arkansas at LSU. Come on, Van. I don't know where anything is on my soundboard anymore. I've already given it away now. But,
My cold, dead hands. Lock of the
week. I think LSU is going to be so angry and Arkansas is going to be so full of themselves. LSU is going to beat that pork roast down, that pork butt.
All right. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a good game. I think Arkansas is playing better, and LSU's you're going to be kind of beat up after last week.
Well,
I mean,
that's true. Right.
But it'll be good. It'll be interesting.
It will. We don't know about BYU-Mizzou. We don't know what's going to happen there. Western Carolina, Texas A&M. Can A&M get off the mat and right the ship? To mix metaphors.
Against Western Carolina, sure. They could start you and me at quarterback and beat them. So
get on the plane tomorrow. North Texas at they may have to the way things are going with their quarterbacks. They may have to. North Texas at Tennessee.
I mean, that's another cupcakey game before Tennessee always has to front load.
Look, North Texas has to play who they schedule. Don't be criticizing their schedule as cupcakes like that. Oh, you meant I'm sorry. You meant it the other way around. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Yeah. All right, John. We're overboard here time-wise. What have we learned?
We learned this Auburn team's gotten better. It's gotten better every week. And all we want is for the team to, after they were playing poorly early in the season, to improve. And they have done that. So
we learned that there was devastation for Aggie Nation. And we learned that I no longer own a PlayStation. We'll leave it at that. One other thing before I mention the books, I just saw Spectre. John hasn't seen it yet. Don't tweet any spoilers to John. But I recorded an instant reaction review on the White Rocket Podcast. So you go to White Rocket Podcast on iTunes, or if you go to whiterocket.podbean.com, the pop culture sister show of this show, you can hear my thoughts on Spectre. We had an email I wanted to mention, and I don't think we got around to it. One of our listeners.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I meant to do that during listener questions.
But he had a great set of compliments for us, how much he enjoys the show and everything. And he had a really good point, though, which was that if you're not on Twitter, we need to make it easier for you to ask us questions and contact the show. And so we are hereby vowing to get the Gmail thing going again. So I believe it's auwishbone@gmail.com.
It is.
auwishbone@gmail.com. I'm sure it's nothing but spam in that folder right now, in that inbox, but we're going to start making a concerted effort to check that one too. So you can tweet your question to us.
His name is George McCreary.
Yeah, George, thank you so much. That really, it was a fantastic email, and it kind of made John and I a little happier day when we got to read it and know that there are people out there that actually listen to this show. It was a revelation. All right, last thing is Lorindo. We're going to have the author of this new book on Coach Gene Lorindo, assistant coach to Shug. It's an awesome book. We have the author, Mr. Kenneth Ringer, coming on. Probably our next episode, if we can get him on for an interview this week. And we'll talk about that. He's going to be doing a book signing before the Georgia and Alabama games at different bookstores in the Auburn area. So check that. I think his Alabama game signing is AU Bookstore. I think he's going to be at J&M for the Georgia game.
I believe so.
I believe that's right. So, yeah, pick up Lorindo. It's flying off the virtual shelves. And also, of course, Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, and Season of Our Dreams, the 2010 Auburn Tigers. I think that's going to do it for this week, John. Let's get on out of here. What do you say?
That sounds good to me.
All right, John. War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, go to bed.